Allan më vruatër kam jala këndal Qire vuren atar një fua Në kallës kja unuje Aqjum da yesachine esia ne ku kavas kaunu
Hi folks, it's Graham Sutherland here. Thursday night, 21st century Jacobite. A little bit running a little bit late tonight. It's 20 past 11 here, so we're kind of running a wee bit late. But that's that pretty much happens every week, so won't worry too much about that. I was going to just dive straight in here with the Middle East situation. So Saudi Arabia is on fire. Wow. I got a real horrible feeling when I seen that. I got a real horrible feeling. That's the biggest oil field. It's the biggest oil refinery in the world, in fact. And there was also another oil field, production oil field, also hit. Now, the number of drones and missiles that they're claiming actually was fired is varying wildly. The first reports that came out said it was 10 drones. And then on day two, they said, no, it wasn't just drones, it was also cruise missiles. And they would appear to come from the north. So now they're saying it was 12. They're saying, not 12, sorry. They're saying it was 8 drones and 8 or 9 cruise missiles. I think that's what they're saying. But as I said, different people are giving different reports. The thing that really got me was they were all very quick to blame Iran, and they were showing they did a showcase thing where the missiles missile debris was all displayed on tables and everything, and I couldn't help chuckling to myself when I seen that one of them had conveniently had the number stenciled on the side, the actual missile serial number stenciled on the side. It wasn't even charred, which is quite interesting. I think, what no one has discussed, certainly never got to the mainstream media at all, is that the Houthi rebels, the Yemenis Houthi rebels, are in Saudi Arabia. They've invaded. They've invaded on at least 3 different points. And they're actually fighting. They're doing, armed combat in rural areas of Saudi Arabia. So they're in there, and they're well in there. So they've also got a lot of sympathisers. There's a lot of Yemenis sympathisers within the Saudi Arabian Empire. It's a huge country, if you look at it, it's almost the whole peninsula there in the Middle East is Saudi Arabia. It's a huge country, very wealthy country, very wealthy country. And I remember years ago, a political commentator saying on TV that if Saudi Arabia had unimaginable wealth, and the regime is brutal, really brutal, and basically this commentator was saying that if they ever got arms, if they ever got weapons, you know, the world would be a really dangerous place. And he was saying that in reflection to the, you know, I mean, the cut people's heads off and everything, and stone women to death if they're accused of being in adultery. Just accused, that's enough. The whole system is barbaric, to say the least. It's also really stuck in the dark ages. It's horrendous. Anyway, that's happened. They've now got Trump sold them $200 billion with a B worth of military equipment. Unbelievable. $200 billion. It's an eye-watering amount. It's just an eye-watering amount. It's going to be done in stages, right enough. But the thing that got me was, so they've sold them billions of dollars worth of military hardware of every single description. How in God's name do they not know where those drones and cruise missiles came from? I mean, all they're saying is, well, some of them came from the north, which means up towards Kuwait, Iran, Iraq, up that direction. That's what they mean by, you know, when they said that. But no one's, as I say, speaking about the fact the Houthis are also in Saudi Arabia. So it could have came from the south. It could have came from the east, because they're in there already, and they've got pockets of sympathisers. The thing is, they've been bombing, Saudi Arabia have been bombing Yemen for 4 years, and they're not. It's not like they're choosing military targets. They're not. They're famous for just blowing up hospitals or schools or. You know, a couple of years ago, you maybe remember, it was a shocking report, but they'd bombed a wedding party at a church, and they killed the bride and the groom, and I can't remember what the number was. It's like 60 or 70 civilians murdered from F-16s supplied by America. Just 2 years ago, remember? Not only supplied by America, but also the Americans are in there with their AWACS planes and everything, their guiding planes. They're helping them with targeting information and all this kind of stuff, and military advisors and also refueling. The big, I can't remember what you call them, but the big American aircraft that refuel the jets and bombers and everything, they are actually providing that service to the Saudi Arabians. They're actually providing that service, so they're totally behind what's going on. So now, there's all this outrage, and they're blaming Iran. Now, that's the thing that's really quite disturbing. So the Houthi rebels have claimed responsibility. They've said, no, it was us. Not only have they said, no, it was us, they have also said, that's just the first wave. We're also going to hit the UAE. The United Arab Emirates, who also support the war, support the Saudis in their war against the Yemenis. The Houthis have said they're going to target their glass towers, the big fancy buildings, the big skyscrapers. That's what they're going to target. That's what they've said they're going to target. And that beautiful, meticulously clean, septic sort of areas you see in Dubai and stuff. It's a bit like that. Anyway, the Houthis have said that's their next target. They don't stop bombing in Yemen. Now, a lot of people's initial reaction was, oh, no, it couldn't have been the Houthis, because they're like a, you know, just like a kind of raggle-taggle, sort of bunch of mercenaries. They're not really a proper army. They're not really a proper... well, they are. our media to start everything and lie to us. So what's happened is they have managed to get, the Houthis have managed to get blueprints of Iranian drones. Now the Iranians shot down a, well no they never, the Iranians jammed the signals of a high-tech American drone and brought it down gently. And they managed to reverse engineer it. The Iranian engineers managed to reverse engineer it. Now, they've got two or three different kinds of drones, the Iranians. But it seems to be that they've given the blueprints, they've given the plans, they've given the architectural plans of these things, engineering plans, to the Houthis. And the Houthis, they've made their own drone as well. So the Iranians' drones are basically copies of the American drone. And now the blueprints, the plans, they've fallen into the hands of the Houthis. So they've just built them, you know. Anyone, any engineer can follow an engineering drawing and source the components. That's quite easy with the World Wide Web. You can source all the components, all the electrical components, and just make it. Just simply make it. So that's what they've done. That's what's happened. And no one's actually thought about that. No one's actually considered that they could quite easily do that. You could quite easily just build them, you know. They're not ultra high tech. They're fairly high tech. They're fairly high tech, and they've got a further range than they claim. But even if they didn't have, I mean, it's kind of anti common sense, really, because any guy with you know, any kind of nounce about them, any kind of common sense, if they needed to fly an extra couple of hundred miles, they would just fit a bigger fuel tank. That's all they would do. They would just simply fit a bigger fuel tank. But I don't think that's what they need. I don't think they needed to do that. I don't think the whole distance thing is even an issue. I think it's a distraction. I think it's a media distraction. Because if they're in Saudi Arabia, they could easily get those drones and those missile launchers right in. It's a big country, remember, and there's lots and lots of empty spaces there, so they could easily get this hardware in there into Saudi itself and fire it off of their own doorstep. And I think that's exactly what's happened here. I don't think it's Iranians at all. The Iranians wouldn't they wouldn't do that. They're not wanting to basically become a target. They know there's US bases all around them, and they know there's all these battleships in the Persian Gulf. Now, I don't know if you know this or not, but it was actually reported that they had, America had, I can't remember what the buzzword is. You know how they've always got these buzzwords for their operations, like Desert Storm and Desert Shield and all this kind of stuff. Well, they had a buzz name, I can't remember what it was, Turbo something. And they said if Iran was to be aggressive or whatever, they would basically instigate this Turbo plan thing or whatever. And they've launched like 30 battleships, or, you know, 30 warships, basically. I don't know where they are. I guess there are different ports all around the world, but they've put them all to sea. They're all at sea. So America's clearly basically hyping itself up to a war with Iran, regardless of what the Houthis have said by claiming responsibility. The Americans have ignored that. But what no one's speaking about as well is why would the Houthis do that? Why would the Houthis just, claim responsibility for something they're not responsible for? You wouldn't do that. No one would do that. There's nothing. I thought about it long and hard, and I can't see that there would be any gain whatsoever for the Houthis to claim responsibility for a major bombing that's disrupted all the world's oil supply. I can't see why they would claim responsibility for that if they didn't do it. I can't see that they would do that. It doesn't make any sense. It's anti-common sense. So I would take them at their word. They've certainly got the motivation. They've certainly got the will and the motivation to do it. Because their country, I mean, let's call a spade here. Their country has been decimated by US-backed Saudi military. Decimated. Destroyed. Thousands and thousands of them have been mass murdered by the Saudi Air Force, flying American jets, firing American missiles, dropping American bombs in Yemen, because Yemen's rich in oil. That's what it's all about, really. That's what it's all about. And I thought it was... I actually put this as a status in my Facebook. Where is it? See if I can find it. I thought this is really. It was basically just I was thinking about how the Americans are absolutely outraged. Absolutely outraged. About the bombing in the Saudi oil fields, you know, and promising retribution and revenge and all this kind of thing. There was no one killed. There was no one killed. There was no casualties. It was a big, horrendous attack. Yeah, granted. But there was no one actually died. And to listen to their rhetoric on the news, you know, the absolute outrage and blaming Iran and all this kind of stuff, and getting all bent out of shape about it, when in actual fact no one died. It just shows you, when you compare that to the thousands and thousands and thousands of people, tens of thousands of people that have been mass murdered in Yemen by their forces, it just shows you exactly where America's priority lies. They're more concerned about the oil and the money than they are about Yemeni's children. I hope you can see that, because that's evidence, if you ever needed evidence. You know, the Americans value human life so poorly, and oil and money so highly. You can clearly see what their god is. You can easily see where, you know, who their god is. It's really not good. So they're going to blame Iran, and they're going to attack Iran. Trouble is, Trump has said he's going to do, well, Trump has said if there's proof, if the final proof comes in, you know, that identify Iran as the instigators, we will take a proportional response. Which means they'll probably blow up an Iranian oil field or two somewhere. Trouble with that is, the Iranians have already said, if you attack us, you know, in any way, shape or form, if anyone attacks us, we will respond in a disproportionate way. In other words, we will come out with all guns blazing. And a lot of people will die. So you don't want to do that. You know, we will come at you hard and fast from every direction. That's what Iran's saying. And we must never lose fact they lose sight of the fact that Iran has got more missiles, short to medium term range missiles, than all of the rest of the world put together. They've tens of thousands of missiles. They've been building up to war for 40 years. They've expected war for 40 years from Israel or America. They've been waiting for it. They've been preparing for it. And they've been working obsessively towards building accurate medium-range missiles, solid fuel booster, medium-range and short-range missiles. So they've got like half a dozen U.S. military targets around them. There's loads of bases around Iran. If you look at a map of U.S. bases around Iran, it's kind of like, it's almost comical, you know. It's they've got them totally encircled all the way around the country, the Americans have. So anyway, Iran's going to take out six of them. They've said this. And every ship in the Gulf, that's what they're going to do. Every ship. So if America thinks they're going to go in and just have a little poke at them, you know, and blow up an oil field, and then sit back and say, right, what are you going to do now? It's not going to work like that. It's not going to work like that at all. If they hit Iran by blowing up one of their oil fields, Iran will blow up every warship in the Gulf, and it will kill tens of thousands of U.S. Personnel. That's what will happen. We're on the brink of war. It's a dangerous, well, we're on the brink of a major catastrophic war. That's the truth of the matter. I don't know how much longer we've got the luxury and the freedom of being able to sit and discuss these things calmly. I think it's all going to kick off over the next few weeks. I really do. I hope I'm wrong. I sincerely hope I'm wrong. I sincerely hope something unexpected happens, and then an air of peace, a vibe of peace comes back over the situation. Because at the moment, it's like, I mean, it's been going on for months, all this nonsense about tankers being impounded and hijacked and quarantined and all this stuff, all this tension. It's building up to fever pitch. That's what it's doing. And that's never good, you know. It's never good. And turning around and blaming Iran for everything that happens in the Middle East, it's just a bit like, it's a bit like a Russian thing, blaming Russia for everything. I mean, the whole American psyche is quite disturbing. There's always got to be an enemy. There's always got to be a boogeyman. There's always got to be someone that you demonize and get the public all behind you. And, oh, you know, we've got to hate these guys, and we've got to hate the Vietnamese. Oh, now we've got to hate the Iraqis. Oh, it's an axis of evil. We've got to hate them, hate them, hate them. Yeah, let's go in and mass murder them. And people won't mind, because we've conditioned the society. We've conditioned everybody to hate them. So no one's going to shed any tears if we go in and kill 30,000 children and old people due to sanctions, and then go in and blast the country apart with F-16s and cruise missiles, because we've mind-controlled everybody to believe that they're not even human. They're cockroaches. They're specks. You know, goons, whatever. They make up all these different grunts, all those different derogatory terms for the enemy, demonize the enemy, and then mass murder them. So that's what they're doing. That's exactly what they're doing. And that's what they have been doing in the Middle East. They put in the CIA to instigate and propagate opposition groups. That's what they did in Iran when they overthrew the Shah of Iran and his regime. they started, they put the CIA in, and the CIA worked with locals, some locals, to spread the news that the Shah was a billionaire, and no one should have 20 or 30 billion. No one should have that. That was what they did. So an opposition group grew right into a revolution. The Islamic Revolution. That's what happened. That's what America had done in Iran. They did it in Iraq. They did it in Libya. And they tried to do it in Syria. It didn't work. They did it in the Ukraine. And they tried to do it in Venezuela. And they tried to do it in Cuba. And failed. They've done it successfully. Well, no, it's not successfully. It's fallen apart. But they did it in Afghanistan as well. There's been fresh fighting in Afghanistan. I don't know if you've been following the news, but there was a lot of people killed there in the last couple of days. The government, the US-backed government troops, are taking on the Taliban head on. The Taliban are they're fighting back hard because Trump refused to meet them because a U.S. soldier, U.S. military personnel, died last week. He got killed in a Taliban attack. So Trump refused to speak to them, and they've went mad, and they've said they're going to come back and they're going to attack again. There's going to be more reprisals. They're going to go, yeah. Trouble is, they let off a huge truck bomb. That's what they did, and it killed a whole dozen of people, like 40 people or something. This truck bomb, and it was in a hospital or near a hospital, because some of the patients, some of the poor people that were in the hospital, got killed. So it's a real mess there. Tragic what's happening in Afghanistan, but they're going to have to come out. It's not working. They've spent, I think, what was it they said, 7 trillion over the years. They've been in, it's been in a long time when I think about it. Well, must be the longest running war. Must be. Because it went in after the Soviets came out, and that was a that was in the late 80s. And they more or less went in back to back after the Taliban ground the Soviet army down. And that's what they did. They just ground them down. That's what they do. They're seasoned fighters. They've been fighting all their life. It's all they know. The Mujahideen. And the Taliban. That's all they've done. These kids are growing up fighting with their dads, wandering about in the hills with their AK-47s, making improvised explosive devices to blow up American vehicles and everything. They're just grinding them down. I remember when the Soviets were there. They were doing the same kind of warfare, clandestine warfare. They were blowing up Russian tankers. They were targeting Russian tankers for some reason. They must like big explosions. You'd only need a small bomb or a small, even an RPG will do it, to blow up a tanker. You know, if you fire an RPG, a rocket-propelled grenade at a tanker, it'll cause a very large explosion. A very large explosion. You just imagine all that, thousands of liters of petrol or kerosene or diesel or whatever it is, or gas. So that's what they did back in the day. And the ground, the Russia just basically was just pouring money into it and getting nothing back. And that's what's happening now with the US. They're pouring money into their campaigns. Like Afghanistan and Iraq, and they're not getting anything back. They're losing respect. The Iraqis have told them to get their bases out of Iraq. That's quite significant. They've told them to pack up and leave. And they've also told them that they don't want US planes, or US military planes, or Israeli planes using their airspace. Those days are over. So it would appear that the puppet government in Iraq is not such a puppet after all. Because they've turned around and dug their heels in and asked America to leave. They have said, however, they're not going to get involved in the Iranian crisis. But they are allies. They are allies. And I believe there's quite a lot of Iranians in Iraq and vice versa. I know they had a war in the 80s, but that was a long time ago. They've sorted out their differences since then. But yeah, they said they don't want to get involved in a war, you know, with Iran. The thing is, you can't take on Iran without taking on Russia. America seems to have overlooked that, that little fact. You can't take on Iran without taking on Russia. They are close allies. They became closer since Hezbollah has been helping the Russian fighters in Syria. It became a lot closer. And of course, the Russians famously sold the Iranians the S-300 and 400 systems. Now, that's scary for the Americans, because the S-400 has basically made the F-35, which cost trillions, into the flying brick. It's made it obsolete. It's made it absolutely obsolete. S-400 can take them out no problem. They're not stealthy enough to evade or avoid getting annihilated by the S-400 system. I think even the S-300 can take them out. There's so much hype. When you listen to any news reports or anything, or any documentaries or whatever made in America, there's so much pride. They've got such an unrealistic kind of head in the clouds sort of, I don't know what you would call it, some kind of blind military patriotism or something. And they talk in really emotional terms about their soldiers and everything. They get all emotional. Oh, you're fighting for our freedom. Oh, you know, they're really good men, and you know, they're really, you know, we take our hats off to you. You know, you're fighting for our freedom. It's like, what, really? How does killing farmers and peasants 8,000 miles away contribute to America's freedom? It doesn't. It contributes to the insecurity. Americans are... We can't really go abroad apart from Europe. We can't go anywhere apart from Europe, really, because they've pissed everybody else in the world off. And I know an awful lot of Americans feel that way as well, because they don't go abroad anymore. They're not coming over to... you know, China or Russia or India or any of these places, or even African countries. They just generally don't. It's too dangerous. They've pissed off too many people over the years, and, you know, they didn't go near the Middle East because all their failed Arab Spring policies and everything. I mean, this is the age of information. People know what their game is now. You know, we don't fall for all our charms. We don't fall for all the nonsense. We know what the MO is. We know what they're trying to do. And we know what they say they're trying to do, but we know what they're really doing. So, Americans can't really go anywhere apart from Europe. But even Europe's getting a bit sticky, because Germany's fallen out with America, and America's fallen out with Germany. Merkel wants to start a European army. She wants to do away with NATO. That's a plan. The Italians have said the same thing. That was quite surprised. Quite surprised when I heard that. But the Italians has turned around and said America's been in our country long enough. I was very surprised when I heard that. And they've asked them to leave. Very surprised. So it's Italy and Germany of the same mind. You know, pack up your military hardware and go. Is there someone else? Is that you, Johnny, trying to get in?
Oh, I'm just listening. Yes, I'm here.
All right, okay. I thought I heard somebody breathing.
Oh, I apologize. I thought I was on mute. No,
stop breathing.
We're talking about. Yeah, sorry about that. Stop breathing altogether, would you? No, even Spain is even talking about America packing up the shit and getting out of there. But you bring up a great point. What really is getting down to the Middle East is these countries, China, Russia, Iran in particular, they've already known that the American petrodollar is going to go to shit sometime or another. And just for example, Russia has one of the biggest gold reserves, bullion gold reserves. If we want to stop the war within the Middle East, if we want to stop being imperialistic as America, obviously the audience knows I am a constitutionalist, but I do not believe in the imperialistic foreign policies within the Middle East.
Yeah.
I've always said that if Trump wants to make an impression, not only to the American people, but globally, we have to go back to the gold reserve. But the problem is that China and Russia has foreseen this for a while. And so they have a big gold reserve. And when it comes to the IMF, International Monetary Fund, if we were to switch back to a gold reserve of sorts, a global gold reserve of sorts, unfortunately, China and Russia in particular, would be at the top of the chain.
Yeah.
It would be a pissing match. And they talked about this even during the Barack Obama administration in 2015 about China maybe being the world-backed currency until the last 3 years. Obviously, China's had some problems because they lent out too much money to America and vice versa. But it's an interesting take because all of it is fought over debt. And how do they solidify that debt? Is through oil control reserves. That's why they have colorizations as BRICS in particular. It's a weird aspect, but nobody ever wants to talk about that. It's always fought over money, and oil is money. But I think Russia's been foreseeing this for a while because they are being the ones backing up their currency by gold in the last 4 to 5 years, plus they're amping up their military. So they're ready for if anything hits the fan.
Yeah, they are. That's right. And also, I heard that both China and Russia, for months and months and months, have been dumping U.S. Treasury bonds, dumping them.
Oh, yeah. Just yesterday, they just had the Federal Reserve lower their interest rate on Treasury bonds. So this is very interesting as America. I was covering that yesterday.
Yes, and the Federal Reserve just put $71 billion cash into the economy. Did you know that?
Yeah, they tried to stimulate the economy, exactly.
They're trying to stimulate the economy by throwing lots of cash at it.
Yeah, that's not going to last too long, especially when we're in $21 trillion in debt right now. Half of that was thanks to Obama, but I digress.
Yeah, I think it's up well over 22 now, Johnny. I'll just Google it right now. National debt, U.S.
Yeah, when Obama left office, it was at 20 trillion. So it may be at 22 plus 23. Yeah.
Let me see. U.S. national debt clock. Have you ever seen that? It's pretty cool.
Yes, I actually have. When I was in the oil fields in Odessa, they actually had one on
the debt clock. It's amazing because it shows you everything. It shows you payroll tax revenue, income tax revenue, U.S. federal tax, U.S. national debt. Okay, so U.S. national debt is sitting at 22.57 trillion.
So going on 23, going on 23.
Yeah.
Here's an interesting thing. Are they trying to crash these big economies such as Russia, China, and America to bring in a one world currency? Because how are these countries going to pay for each other's debt? Even the Federal Reserve yesterday was talking about this. People were asking hard questions on the Federal Reserve spokesperson. They were saying, how is this going to affect global economies? If America's economy collapses and or China's or Russia's, the three superpowers, both America and China's economy will collapse at the same time. And it almost goes back contrary to the Middle East problem. Are they going to divide up the Middle East? Is that how they're going to do this?
Yeah.
Because everybody's on petrol. Yeah. It's insane.
That's right. I think I was going to say, when the national debt, surpasses the gross domestic product, then you've got a problem.
Yeah, the GDP, yes.
Yeah, when the national debt number is bigger than the GDP, you know you've got serious issues. And that's what's happened in America. The gross the gross domestic product is $21 trillion.
Yeah, I'm not into too much of the stock, but even the housing system is, they were talking about how it's not in effect, but it kind of is right now. I believe the housing system has $1.8 trillion invested in America. So people pay about $1.8 trillion just in taxes annually for the tax revenue on the American side. So they take that into consideration as well, but that's $1.8 trillion just right there. But it's insane because nobody's buying houses in America. It's been slowing down even after the recession of 2008 during the Obama administration. But China's having a hard time, as well as Russia. And it goes back to really production. Nobody's producing anything no more.
Nobody's making anything apart from the Chinese,
Yeah, it's a scary thing. But China has a problem when it comes to their population, so they have their own problems. But all these numbers and all these problems globally, we are a global market. A lot of people forget that America just controls the policies. No, America has a big influence, don't get me wrong. But at the same time, if one economy slows down, it's going to affect every other economy. It's a global market now.
It really is.
Since the 40s, the 50s, really.
Yeah. What was it someone said? If when America sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold.
It almost is looking like that. Even Germany is going through a recession. It's an interesting take, yes. And EU, UK are having their own diplomatic problems. But America is obviously the driving force behind that. But I think America is having some problems and nobody wants to talk about it. And you just said that they're stimulating the economy. That's a big insight as to what is happening, especially when they lowered the interest rates by a quarter percent. And they've done that twice within the last year, so almost a half a point within 1 year. And supposedly they're going to do it again in January. So we're talking about a whole point here in 1 year that they're lowering the interest rate. But they're blaming it, or they're saying that they're blaming it on other economies' interest rates are so low. That's what they said at the press conference yesterday. But at the same time, obviously, we all know the Middle East is a big part of this when it comes to the petrodollar. America's dollar is not backed by gold. It's not backed by silver. It's backed by oil.
Yeah, that's right. But I think the thing is, though, Johnny, I mean, it's kind of like it totally defies common sense. So there's a big economic black hole. So the Fed have decided to throw $71 billion into that big hole, and that's paper money. It's just paper money.
Fiat currency, yes.
Yes. And did you also know that the shale oil industry is taking a major hit? It's turning out it's not nearly as profitable as they thought it was.
Well, Shell, to be honest, has been taking a hit since 2015, so this isn't the first. Halliburton and Baker Hughes was going to buy out Shell because they were having such big problems. But it turned into a big political scene. Yeah.
Yes.
It turned into a big political scene.
There's another thing as well. The American oil industry is designed to process crude oil. Shale gas oil is much, much lighter.
Well, it depends where they're drilling at. There's a plenty of Shell stations, even offshore, but I think we're coming to this focal point, Graham. I used to work in the oil field back in 2015, before the collapse during Obama administration. When you see my videos, the flag in the background is one of the places I used to work for, Murphy Oil. But right. I digress on that. But at the same time, I think we're coming to this point that everybody's going to start going back to their own oil reserves. Everybody's going to start being in their own corners. They're going to be self-sufficient. America's not going to have a lot of control when it comes to the Middle East here pretty soon, I don't believe, especially since OPEC is out of the picture. The United Nations. Nobody talks about the United Nations. We don't even have a state representative in the United Nations. It used to be Nikki Haley. She resigned in April. So there is no United Nations function. But when it comes to oil and economies, that's how we produce energy from everywhere, to the United States, to Scotland, wherever anybody's at. I think everybody's going to start going back into their own corners. Obviously, China doesn't have a lot of oil, so they're going to have to import some. But Russia, they'll be fine. It's a weird thing how this is going on, because it's almost like everybody's going to go to their own corners. But is this going to mess up the economy? Are we going
Norway,
to see
Norway's got oil. Scotland's got oil.
Yeah, the Norwegian Norway's, yes. And Russia has a big part in Norway. But
yes.
It's insane. Usually when people, usually how wars start, and we all know how wars start, usually wars start because there's a debt to be collected. And there's many debts to be collected across all these nations. And when wars end, that's how they solidify debt. And hopefully, as you mentioned, we don't get into a war to solidify these debts. But if we do go into a war, it's looking like it might be in Iran. And it's a sad thing, because we're not even going to have to worry about Iran. America will be going to war with Russia at the end of the day. That's the big war that nobody wants to talk about.
I know. And Russia and Iran are close, let's face it.
Yeah, they're close. Yeah, they're very close. And Russia buys a lot of oil from Iran. They're the biggest importers of Iranian petroleum. And then China in second place.
Yeah.
So, yes, Russia's not going to let that go easy.
I heard something interesting just yesterday, Johnny, they were saying that the Iranians have managed to get around the blockade, the economic blockade. You know, the Americans have got sanctions on them and they can't sell their oil, in the international markets. What they're doing is they're putting tankers out to sea, huge tankers out to sea, and they're basically selling it on the high sea. They're pumping it into smaller tankers, and that's what they're doing. That's how they're selling it.
That was the whole controversy some 2 months ago when it came to these oil tankers being "quote unquote" overtaken or searched by these policies that America sanctions that America put on them. Yes, America already knew this was going to happen. The black market was going to grow.
Yeah.
But America is being too imperialistic. I agree with that. We shouldn't be, like we mentioned before, we mentioned months prior on Revision Media, even on Richard's station and others. The more sanctions that America puts on any of these economies, the more that there's going to be a market on the subside of this. And it's not going to be good, because you could only put so many sanctions before people say, screw America. So it's not that I'm hating on America. It's not that I'm talking shit or anything, but we have to be honest about this, folks. It's a serious thing.
Yeah, people all around the world are getting basically sick and tired of U.S. bullying, economic predatory behavior.
Oh yeah. So what do you foresee that then? It's looking like I don't know. we're going to see in the next 6 weeks that supposedly that when it comes to the influence of the American dollar, even the Federal Reserve was talking about that there's going to be some big changes in the next 6 weeks. What do you foresee that for America's front or the global front?
I really think that the American economy is going to crash, Johnny. I think it's going to crash over the next few months. I really do. Things are really wobbly. I can see it happening. Just boom, big crash. Look how delicate the international markets are. When that oil refinery was hit in Saudi Arabia, they reckon it was only affecting, and I mean, it's a big refinery, sure, biggest in the world, but it only affected the global oil production between 1 and 5%. But the US markets plunged on the news of it. So it just shows how fragile they are. Yeah.
Oh, no, I've been foreseeing this as well. I live in Texas, as you know, but it's almost like they tried to pull this off during the Barack Obama administration. They said, oh, we need to be green power. We need to be green power. While I was working in the oil fields, they were bringing in oil tanker barrels that hold some 180,000 barrels of oil. And I said, wow, green energy. What the heck's going on in Odessa, Midland? I said, this is crazy. But it's almost like now when we talk about the picture of America, America is now the biggest producer of oil. I think we understand what's about to happen. Yeah, we're about to see what's about to happen. America maybe knew that we were going to go in this direction when it comes to the dollar, the petrodollar, to be clarified, was going to collapse. So America needs to be self-sufficient within its own energy spectrum. And, of course, Donald Trump always says, oh, we're the biggest producers of petroleum and oil, and there's plenty of jobs. Yes, we need to stimulate the economy. Don't get me wrong. We need jobs. But it's a catch-22 of sorts. Is the Middle East and America's foreign policy going to come to an end? And it's looking like that's the case. And if that's the case, the American economy is going to take a big dip as well, as you said.
Well, that's what's happened.
Nobody looks at it in those terms.
Aye, that's right, Johnny. That's what's happening. You can see it. The noose is getting tighter and tighter and tighter around the neck of the U.S. Treasury. And I know that Trump has stimulated the economy and there's a lot of new jobs and, you know, there's a lot of manufacturing started in different places and, you know, all this kind of stuff. Also rebuilding some of the infrastructure, roads and bridges and stuff, you know, there's work in all these areas, thanks to Trump. But to be honest, I think it's too little, too late. What Trump's doing should have been done, what Trump's doing should have been done 20 years ago, instead of getting deeper and deeper and deeper into debt, that's Obama's legacy and Clinton's legacy.
And Bush, Yeah.
Yeah, and Bush just get deeper and deeper into debt and just keep borrowing more money. It doesn't work.
Well, I know this is an American station and you're from Scotland, but I pose the question to you. Do you believe that's exactly what's been happening with these Masonic bankers, that they've been trying to drain the American wealth? And when America gets pushed against the corner, usually war happens. Anytime a great nation, even Germany, as a matter of fact, was pushed against the wall through the banking systems. And what happened? They tried to declare their own sovereignty. And, of course, we saw what happened in World War II. Are we seeing a 3.0 version of this? Because it's getting very dire. You said that there was going to be war. I believe that there may be as well, especially with the Federal Reserve banking system. They were talking about some crazy stuff yesterday. And I said, my goodness, this does not sound good for the American economy. And usually when this happens, the biggest country usually tries to collect debt or to collect their loans. And even in the press conference, they said, we're going to start collecting the loans internationally. It's a big paperwork game to do, but we're going to start doing it. what that entails to me is the Federal Reserve is hurting right now. They're hurting drastically. And they don't know what to do right now because the numbers are falling too quick.
Yes. Yes, they are. They are. Not only that, they went up too quick as well, Johnny. You know, when Trump came into power and, you know, the unemployment was dropping month on month, some of the numbers went scary high. It's like, whoa, you know, slow down. And it was all this, oh, this record's been broken and that record's been broken. And, oh, this is a whole new, you know, number we've got in this industry and that industry. It was just all too good to be true. I had to, something. All that stuff.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, you know, all of that stuff, all those different indexes, you know, is to do with stocks and shares and everything. They were all like gaining and gaining and gaining, an unnatural amount, basically. And it just, it was a bubble. And it's, you know what happens to bubbles, you know? It's obvious. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. I've been seeing that as well. Yeah, even I even believe this as well. Who cares if these numbers are going up? It usually has to go down. But it seems to me that it hasn't even gone down. Even we broke another record last week. But then this week, we're talking about the Federal Reserve loan, its interest rates, and this and this and that. It's like, oh, crap, something might happen. But even history tells us this. Before a big depression in America's history, this has happened four times before in America's history. Anytime that the stock market goes up that quick, usually there is a big depression, not even a recession, a depression, where the banks just cut off all the money and everybody has to go their own separate ways. I was even looking into silver the other day, and I used to invest in gold and silver a lot back in the day, probably 2 years ago. I haven't bought any in the last 2 years. But even though I was looking at silver, I said, my goodness, it went up an extra $3 for silver per ounce? It was at $17, $19 per ounce. And it only used to be at, like, when I first started buying silver and gold, for silver in particular, it only used to be $9 an ounce.
Yeah.
Now it's up to $16. I'm like, wow, that doubled in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
And, of course, it went up. It went up in the last year some $3. So that's a big indicator as to the American dollar losing its value. And everybody needs to start investing in gold and silver, but everybody put in their money into the stock market because they thought they were going to get a quick flip. Now people are pulling out their money, especially with the Federal Reserve. I think a lot more people are going to pull out their money in the next month. I guess the Federal Reserve said in the next 6 weeks we'll see some big numbers, but it's interesting because that's going to be a global effect when it comes to the Middle East.
I think it's interesting what you said about silver. I remember seeing a report, and it said that the price of silver is being kept artificially low. It's been engineered, it's been designed to be kept. The price is silver's actually worth, in real terms, silver's worth a lot more than it's traded for.
I wouldn't doubt it. That's why a lot of people, when they buy raw bullion metals, they usually buy silver. I started off with silver, and then I switched slowly to gold. I had a little portfolio of both, but even then, gold is too high. It's like some $30 a gram now. It used to only be $22, $24. So it's insane. Since the last 5 years, it's been insane. And America's saying our economy's doing good, and don't get me wrong. I'm not a Trump hater or Trump tutor, but at the same time, I think people need to be honest with themselves, and they need to start looking at the numbers for what they are.
Yeah, that's right. I've got an interest in silver, Johnny. I find it quite interesting. I also find it quite interesting how you can come by it. You know, how you can find it, basically recycle it out of industrial stuff.
Computers, yes.
Yeah.
Well, in America, you could even buy physical gold and silver. Well, in most places you can, but you could buy it online. I used to go through jmbullion.com, But even when I got on a low time, you could sell it at the pawn shop, your local pawn shop. And they'll give you the worth and weight of gold during that time period. So say you buy gold 2 years ago for a certain price, and then you sell it 2.5 years later, they'll give you the price on the stock market. So that's a good thing. But people need to invest in that, because fiat currency is no good, folks. Everybody needs to understand that. This paper money is how we get more in debt, how the government controls this more and more and more. Everybody always talks about the American controlling the Middle East. They're controlling America as well, domestically, when it comes to this fiat currency. And I don't know if this is a propagandized situation where they're trying to collapse the American dollar within the Middle East, so then they stimulate the economy with fiat currency, which then puts inflation on the American dollar, which then makes it less valuable. But we should start trading physical silver and gold. That's how we come across this. I was hoping to ask the guest that was on Richard's show yesterday, but it seemed to me that we had some technical difficulties, and they were trying to restrict the phone calls yesterday. I don't know if Richard could hear us or not, if he has a point of opinion on that. But I really did want to ask his guest that, and it's very interesting.
Because we have Johnny, I think that we were perhaps getting targeted because of my guest. He's actually been rather viral on YouTube, and it's been very known in the truth community for about 10 years now. He's out of Australia, but he does speaking engagements all over the world, does independent media interviews all the time with a lot of platforms, and he speaks out, for example, very openly against Israel. He's very much a defendant of the situation in Gaza, for one. And
who's this?
Actually,
that's Richard.
Oh, his name is Max Egan. I-G-A-N.
He's an Australian gentleman.
Yeah, Max Egan. And he actually mentioned about three years ago at one speaking engagement in Australia. It started with some hecklers in the crowd, but after the event, he was actually beaten up by some Israelis. He was assaulted. So they don't take kindly to people who get a big response, you know, get a lot of listeners and fans in the independent media who speak out against the system. Certainly speaking out against Israel is a big no-no. So, I think because him being high profile for independent media and coming on the station, you know, that could be a benefit to us, it was seen. And he gets trolls following him all the time. So targeting him and or targeting, his perhaps helping our station get notoriety, I highly suspect was behind it, because his communication with us kept going mute where we couldn't hear him. He could still message us in the communication platform. He could still hear us, but he couldn't speak. And this happened like 4 times. Now, I've rarely had those sort of incidents happen, but any other time, the person reconnects and it's fine the rest of the time. You know, it's a fluke. I really think it was intentional. And then once we went to Skype for the rest of the interview, there were no problems, as if they didn't have as easy access to mess with Skype. Maybe Skype was more secure, being perhaps a bigger, you know, corporate entity than this other platform we use for communicating. I don't even like to mention the name of any of them, because it just gives potential enemies that much more information. But yeah, the one we use maybe was easier to target. So it was very curious. We didn't have any problems once we got on Skype for the rest of the show. So
yeah.
Yeah, I was very interested, because he even brought it up, and I used to think I still think like this, but he was even talking about aquaponics. I've been a big proponent about it. But even besides aquaponics, growing your own food, growing your own agriculture, your own medicine, I was hoping to ask him the question about trading physical gold and silver amongst each other as such a bartering system.
Well,
because
sure.
Even if the American
basically, his message, Johnny, his message was basically to create an entire community off the grid, if you will. You know, local resistance, just by building your own infrastructure, contrary to the system gradually. And yeah, this kind of local resistance is what he specializes in. There's one website you can check out. He helps to manage, which is his website is called The Crow House. And then there's this other website, The Full Circle Project, which he is one of the webmasters at and contributes to. And that's has a lot of people contributing to it. And it's the sort of thing I describe, local communities, infrastructure, just building your own system counter to this megalith against our interests, which it seems is too corrupt to be able to fix at this point.
Well, I hope we have him on here in the near future.
Oh, yeah, he'll be back.
It was a
I'm
great
gonna
interview.
Have him back for another interview.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, it was interesting. I didn't mean to take the limelight of that, Graham. If you had anything to add to that, I do apologize. See what Richard had on that, because it was something that was so strange. I know it's late in your neck of the woods because you're in Scotland, but man, oh man, we were trying to call in some other callers as well. We just kept getting muted and that we couldn't hear the gentleman. And it was very interesting yesterday, but he was talking about all this, some of the Middle East policies, of course, how we could be self-sufficient as just humanity. Not even just per country, Scottish, American, England, whatever. But I've been a big proponent of that, so I hope I could pick his brain next time he's on, Richard. But, yes, yeah, sorry, Graham, I didn't mean to take the thunder away from that.
No, it's okay, it's fine. It is an interesting thing. Yeah. No, I was enjoying listening to you there. I didn't really know that, to be honest.
Oh, yeah. Well, isn't that how they have control, Graham, if I may pose the question on that? They control us through debt. They control us by needing us to be dependent, quote-unquote, on them. And it's all through fiat currency. It's all through oil. You've always talked about this. People are dying over black gold, which is oil. And I've understood this for a while myself, but I think it's apparent that we need to make that for the audience, that this is exactly how we get down these dire roads, is because we believe that we have not enough resources. And this gentleman was covering this yesterday on Richard's show. That's exactly what we're getting into. And you have to be proactive. You can't be a keyboard warrior. You actually have to be into a system such as aquaponics and provide for your local community, or you have to be a specialist in something. You have to provide a service. Nobody provides a service nowadays. That's the shameful part. Everybody gets paid to work for the middleman, we're the middleman, working for the corporate interest, the government of sorts sometimes. We're starting to foresee that, wouldn't you agree, when it comes to governments subsidizing the private industry, the banking system, the car manufacturing system? And then you guys have a problem over there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the fact that the government's bailed out the bankers spoke absolute volumes. Yeah, spoke absolute volumes.
How the hell did that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous that happened. And it's ridiculous that it kind of happened in the U.S. and Europe, more or less at the same time. You know, we paid an absolute fortune to bail out the bankers, and then they became partly, well, some of our banks anyway, became partly public-owned. You know, a percentage of them was public-owned. But it blew me away when that happened, and it just shows you where the real power is.
Did that happen before the American banking system during the Obama administration? I know you guys had some problems over there in the EU-UK already. Paul was just on. He was elaborating on some of this. But did that happen before even Barack Obama bailed out the banking systems in 2013? Or not even 2013. I believe it was 2007 he bailed them out before the housing market. The housing market bubble was in 2008.
Yeah, no, it happened in this country as well, Richard. The government's actually bailed out all the major banks, including RBS, spectacularly by pumping billions into them. But then they claimed that the part of the conditions of bailing them out was that, you know, a percentage, I can't remember, I think it's like 20% of the big banks are supposedly now in public ownership. But I mean, what does that mean? I don't even know what that means.
Well, technically, the government, quote unquote, the Federal Reserve, if we're going to talk in American terms, pretense, they want to bail out the auto industry. I was just reading and watching an article the other day. When the American Federal Reserve bailed out the auto industry, mind you, Barack Obama bailed out the banking system and the auto industry. I have a friend, we were talking about this the other day. He works at a Ford plant in Minnesota. And we were talking about some of this. He's not as politicized as you and I are. But we were talking about this. And I was going over doing some research after we got off the phone. The federal government bailed out the auto industry, and they lost. They bought stocks in the auto industry. That's how they bailed out the auto industry. They didn't give them money. They bought stocks. So the government was hoping to slowly capitalize on this. Obviously, with technology, other countries have surpassed our technology. But they lost $11.8 billion when Obama did that. So they lost money. And who does that mean? When the government loses money, who does that really mean loses the money? The people lose the money because we're the government. We pay our taxes. It's insane that the government is making these big things. But if we were to look at it in a spectrum, what does that mean? Private companies are capitalizing off government, and government and private companies are turning into a whole. They're turning into a system. They're feeding off one another. If one goes bankrupt, one bails out, and vice versa. So technically, these big billionaires, these big trillionaires, are making foreign policies or domestic policies because government bailed them out already. It's a strange thing that nobody wants to talk about. Government wants this to happen. Why? Because they can have more control. They can put us in bigger debt. And if we're in debt, then they have something to hang over our heads. It's insane. It's getting very dirty.
It's a sick society, Johnny. That's what it is.
It's a sick system, yes.
Yeah, it really is. It's a broken system. It's a broken system. And they know it's a broken system. The bubble always pops at the end of the day. It can't do anything else. It's designed to fail.
Excuse me, Graham. I just sent you a few links. I just messaged you a few links to Max's websites and some of his YouTube videos. I also just see that yesterday, in addition to being on my show, Arcane Semantics on Revision Media, Max was also on Press TV yesterday as well, talking about the Saudi Arabia accusations of Iran sponsoring the oil plant attack. And I'm sure he was defending Iran, just as you and I do, and knowing better from history. History pretty much tells all, where you could tell the details of a lot of these events just by knowing the players. Right, Graham?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And as I was just saying to Johnny there, it's obvious who's really in control. If a government's bailing out big business, you know, and not only is big business, in a lot of cases, not paying corporation tax or whatever, the government's actually bailing them out when they start to falter. So that's where the power is. You know, they say follow the money. Well, where we're following the money to? We're following the money to the central bankers and big business. That's who's running the world.
Yeah. Well, they're using the oil field and they're using petrol in particular to bail out their debts.
Yeah.
And I believe that's exactly why Iran's in a big picture of this recently, yes. And they're trying to pose that Iran pulled off these attacks on Saudi Arabia to get in another perpetual situation where we start controlling another country's resources to bail out the debt system that we've all been implemented into.
Yeah.
And they won't tell us the full story. They'll just say that those are the bad guys. They'll point over there. That's the bad guy. Those are the bad guys. We got to go get them. Yes, it's to cover up their own debts, to cover up their own tracks. It's a sticky situation.
It's a screwed up situation, Richard. And, you know, the ordinary working man's paying like 25% of his wage in tax, and then another 20% on, you know, VAT or whatever, you know, purchase tax, whatever you want to call it. It's been absolutely hammered. And big business are not only are they not being hammered, they've been given money. Given money.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a very interesting take. It's a very interesting take if we're going to talk about this tonight. And it's something that the audience needs to know. Iran is not even backed by the International Monetary Fund banking system, the IMF.
No, that's
right. Are they trying to put Iran, America, with all these sanctions, are they trying to put Iran underneath this banking system? And Iran is being very hesitant, and I don't disagree with them. They shouldn't go into this. And Russia is not even a part of that either.
If I could jump in on that one, of course they are. I mean, look at throughout history, any nation who tried to resist the private central banks. We have Adolf Hitler, for that matter. We have what Gaddafi was doing in Libya. I mean, no country tends to get away with this, even though it is right. You know, every nation should be able to be autonomous and not have this parasitic international control.
Aye. Yeah.
Well, maybe Graham could elaborate on the Masonic banking system, because I think that's very apparent that most people do not understand on this.
Well, personally, I would consider it more Talmudic. You know, I think that it's Judaic at its core, and when you look at all the players involved, there's no denying that. But, I mean, Masonic might be a term that can be more widely accepted, and I know there are a lot of secret societies ingrained and woven into a lot of this as well, so I'd say that it's neither here nor there, but both are pretty accurate. I do focus on the elitist Jewry. I think that this Talmudic influence, Synagogue of Satan, is a major presence toward this push, this New World Order agenda push.
Aye, but they're using the vehicle of Freemasonry, global Freemasonry, Richard, to implement it. I mean, what is the seal on the back of the dollar? Whose mark is on the back of the dollar?
Very true.
It's the pyramid, you know, and they're building. They're building the beast system. The capstone's not on the pyramid yet, but the capstone's there. The capstone, of course, has got the eye in it. So that's what they are building. They're building a secular, what would you call it? A secular edifice, a secular system. And it's going to be crowned by Lucifer himself. That's the game. That's what they're doing.
Well, I see a lot of this Talmudic influence as more or less one and the same with what you call a tribute to Satanism in a lot of cases. Even going back to the search for the Holy Grail, the Knights Templar, from what I understand, there was Judaic players and infiltration. There were Judaic players, there was Judaic infiltration, even at that early in the game. And, well, now, yes, Masons are a strong vehicle. We have these other societies like the Bushes, strongly involved in Skull and Bones, for example. So definitely, these secret societies are good ways of drawing in key players and blackmailing, extortion. That's why the Epstein situation would be a great opportunity if we could really bust it more open. I mean, we see links to the United Kingdom, royal family. We see links to, obviously, the Clintons and many more criminal players. players in the United States political system as well.
Yes, that's right. But it's interesting, one of the central tenets of Freemasonry is the whole wisdom of Solomon and Solomon's temple, the building of Solomon's temple and everything. They're part of that as well.
Well, it's all aligned against everything we stand for, I'd say. You know, our moral traditions, our culture, and even those who may differ spiritually, Graham, I think the traditionalists, the nationalists, the Christians can all agree on a lot of these things being poison to our society.
Well, yes, and they're all interlinked with the same mindset, and it's basically the secularization of society and being obsessively antichrist. That's what they are, obsessively antichrist. So anything that's anything that goes against the basic roots of Christianity, like morality and stuff, they're against that. That's what the whole LGBTQ thing is all about and everything. They've got a counterfeit of everything Christianity has. You know, all the major points of Christianity, they've got a counterfeit, an opposite.
Yes, this is a spiritual warfare.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is.
And is it exactly what they're doing, though? They're using money. They say that everybody has a price to sell your soul. Johnny and the Fiddle kind of deal. You know, the song Johnny and the Fiddle and all these stories that we hear. People selling themselves. Even Bob Dylan, supposedly he said he even had a price for his soul.
That song is called The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
Yes, that's a good song. I grew up on that song in the truck with my stepfather, Yes, he was a long-haul truck driver. I grew up in the summer times with that song, Johnny and the Fiddle. But even Bob Dylan mentioned this. He says that every man has a price for their soul. Isn't that exactly what they're doing? They're all putting us into debt. They're all putting us into debt where we're going to sell our souls for a loaf of bread, for goodness sakes. We see this happening in other places that are not as fortunate as America, EU, UK, that especially in the Middle East, that people will sell their souls for just something. You know, they even sell children, for goodness sakes. You know, this is satanic stuff. This is a spiritual warfare. I used to never believe it. You and others have turned me on to this outlook on this. I used to never think this way, but I believe the more that we get into debt and we all fight amongst each other, these are globalist, Masonic, and even Jewish wars. Richard's asked me this question before, and I said, you know, the Jews are just the ones that are in control of the money. They're very intelligent when it comes to money. That's their niche. That's their whole shebang. But
I'd say more manipulative than intelligent. I'd say lacking that sense of altruism is a crutch. And perhaps they've inherited that gene, we look in the animal kingdom. There are a lot of species which have evolved specifically to parasite off other species. And, you know, I'm sorry to say that the Jewish people tend to exhibit this. Hundreds and hundreds of years have shown them thrown out of hundreds of countries. Once a given nation, province, kingdom got tired of this sort of manipulation, extortion, exploitation rather, and parasitic behavior. So, I mean, I think it's possibly a real thing, and I'm sure I would be considered racist, anti-Semitic, giving out hate speech propaganda for that one. But fortunately in the U.S., I can be a little more hardcore, perhaps. I'm not going to be traveling to Europe anytime soon, but honestly, I feel at this point we have to call a spade, and that's the way I see it.
Yeah, but it's a complex issue, Richard. Everybody always wants to boil it down to one group. Oh, it's the Jews. It's all the Jews.
Oh, Graham, I'm not saying that, but I'm saying in our countries, if we want this nationalism trend, for example, to actually take hold, we would have to take control of our central banks and our politics and our entertainment industries. And we know who controls all of those things in all the white countries, but can very easily slip by seeming as though they are, European and European American people. I mean, yeah. It's basically incognito, you know, hiding among whites, but not really at all looking out for those people. And this is the problem. You know, we don't see this happening if we are able to change those factors and take control of all those elements. But, you know, as I say, of course, there are other elements. You're correct. But that would be a strong one that cannot be overlooked, because every time it will bring us right back to where we are now.
Yeah, you know what just popped into my head? It's quite interesting, Richard. It's directly linked to what we're speaking about. In the Bible, when the Jews escaped out of Egypt, out of captivity in Egypt, and they were waiting on Moses. Moses went up the mountain to get instruction from God, the Ten Commandments and everything else. Anyway, the Jews were getting impatient. You know, they were sitting down there waiting for Moses to come back, and they were getting impatient, and they were hankering after the gods, the false gods that the Babylonians, the pharaohs were worshipping. You know, they've got like 900 and odd different demon gods. The Jews were getting impatient to go back. And here's Moses, one of their number, actually going up and speaking to God on a mountain. And at the same time, they're busy building idols and, you know, wanting to go back to, actually wanting to go back to where they just escaped from, you know, captivity-wise. Yeah. And it's interesting that our royal family claims, well, the Queen claims to be a direct descendant of Pharaoh out of Egypt. So we're going right back. That's how far back this goes. It goes right back to Moses.
Well, I've heard a lot of claims entertained regarding the royal families of Europe. A good number of them, at least, having been infiltrated by Judaic influence, you know, married into the family. In the case of Saudi Arabia, from what I understand, their royal family are crypto-Jews, you know. And as far as the European families, well, it's hard to deny. I mean, when you look at the way England, France, Germany are controlled today, and even Northern Europe, Sweden, Denmark, I mean, these are all under Jewish control. And we don't see any of these Christian values, Christian morality. We see it less and less with each decade because of the sort
especially in the media.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The media is pushing immorality. And the media is primarily run by Jews.
Yeah, so that's why I say it is a big influence, a big element, a huge amount of control over these nations, and it could make a huge difference. Also, of course, looking out for these other groups' influence and not relenting on that either, but it could make all the difference in turning Europe's nations and the United States around, taking control of our currency, our politics, our media, entertainment industry, all of that. But, yeah, this would require, you know, a strong plan to find a good middle ground, to be fair. You know, no one's talking about harming anyone, of course. But this should happen. I think that everyone should have local sovereign control. and their resources could build over time, their descendants could labor less over the years, not more. And that's what we're seeing today. You get more for your spending power all the time because of the system. I mean, the value of the dollar, of the pound, you know, I mean, what you can buy for it. The price of things goes up higher than the average wage. And, you know, the spending power of what you can make for your daily, your hourly, your yearly, any of that. So I'm just saying the system is parasitic, you know, sucking it to the top. And, yeah, we need that local control. People don't recognize these elements which have foreign interests. I mean, I mention all the time the dual citizens who are so prevalent in U.S. Congress, you know.
Which I totally agree with you on, Richard. I do not believe in dual citizenship.
Well, that's an extreme example. But even if you're not a dual citizen, even if you're not a dual citizen, though, that, there is this Marxist sort of...
Mexican American, Israel American.
Some say that
citizenship, yes.
You know, Graham, this is an interesting point I've heard many times, is that some claim that both communism and Zionism are political Jewry.
Yes. Oh yes.
Yeah. So I mean that pretty much covers the whole spectrum. I mean, all the neocons, so called conservatives, are controlled by Zionists, and then the leftists are controlled by communism. And yeah, the Jews are controlling both sides of the coin there. And that's what we have to do, you know, root all of that out of the system.
The thing is, look at the likes of the Bushes and the Clintons and the British political elite. They're not Jewish. But they're all bloodline related to British royalty.
Do you think they play off
these societies you speak of? Again, they fill in the gap whenever the religion cannot bind people enough on its own. I'd say that's the filler to take care of any remaining gaps, the glue which binds this political Jewry of communism and Zionism together, is these secret societies, Masonic forces, and similar.
Yeah, but they seem to be quite religious about worshiping Pan and Molech and Beelzebub and all that. They seem to be obsessive about it.
You know, I think that's for shock value, initiation. I mean, supposedly... we hear of this with the Skull and Bones initiations as well, that they're naked, blindfolded, confessing some early sexual experiences to a group in some ritual that's supposed to traumatize them, basically, and get them ready for the blackmail and extortion they'll be in for the rest of their life.
Then they've got to lie in a coffin and masturbate.
So I don't think that they're really... believing in fear and worship and, you know, idolatry of the occult as much as they're just trying to intimidate with these rituals.
No, I think that's just how they suck people into it, Richard, because these are young men at university, you know, in their late teens and early 20s, who basically don't really know much about anything. So I think the whole occultic thing is introduced to them at that stage, almost like a fun thing, like a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Oh, the way we saw it portrayed in that film, even the Tom Cruise film. Let's see, what was the name of that
you're
one?
Not on about, Eyes Wide Shut. College.
Yeah, that's the name of it.
I thought you were on about Eyes Wide Shut.
Yeah, no, I think that's what I meant. I believe, yeah, it totally. Shows how it can have an appeal to these young urban professionals. You know, it has this edgy excitement to these groups, societies, meetings, these elitist parties, all of it.
Yeah.
But isn't Scientology tied into Masonic viewpoint. I don't know. I'm just trying to be neutral on this.
Scientology. Well, just because we brought up Tom Cruise for the film, I'm not sure Scientology plays that major a role, but, you know, it may be one of these groups that has influence over some individuals.
May I ask you this question, Richard? Do you believe that the Masonics created religion, or do you believe Judaism created religion? It's very interesting, because I think that's the focal point, the crossroads that we're coming to.
Well, religion was around in earlier forms, of course, from a lot of...
Well, religion has been around since the Aztecs.
Yeah, it predates Abrahamic religions considerably, other forms of religion. They didn't create religion. I actually like the insight Graham gives us when he points out that the Catholic Church is really against the teachings of Christ. I mean, the whole institutionalizing of it, creating it in what we know as religion, is institutionalizing it. And that is an abomination of what these teachings of Christ intend. And, of course, a lot of similar philosophies of live and let live similarly be opposed to such. Graham, what are you... your elaborations on that. I mean, that's pretty much how you describe it, though, right? I mean, the formalization of these religions is an abomination of what they once stood for. Christianity,
yes,
in particular.
Yes, but yes, the Romans seen how popular Christianity was becoming and how they envied them. The Romans were envying the Christians. So what they did was they converted on the surface. They converted
to Catholicism.
Well, they converted to Christianity, but it was their own brand. It was Roman Catholicism.
Yeah, Johnny, Catholicism is one variation of Christianity. And, I mean, there are others. A Protestant is one. You know, there are a lot of variations of Christianity, and Catholicism is one under that larger umbrella. Would that be a way?
It's a perversion of Christianity, though, Richard.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
The only reason why I bring up Catholicism is because they do worship priests and or saints, which is the Bible says in Christianity, you shall not worship any other saints or idols. So Catholicism does do that. I used to be a Catholic. I'm a born-again Christian, and they do use that when it comes to praying to St. John, St. Mary, St. Joseph, all these. That is considered paganism in my eyes. I've had to go through that myself in my own religious views. That's why I consider myself Christian-like. I do not pray to Virgin Mary no more. I do not pray to St. John. I do not pray to St. Angelo. I do not pray to any of these, St. Michael, none of them, because that is a deception of giving your energy to Christ or God in particular. So that's the only reason why I say it's paganism. Because okay. They do use Virgin Mary. They do use other idols. That's the only reason why I say paganism for Catholicism.
Okay. Well, that's a good point of clarification. That's a good point of clarification to round off with. Graham, I was just looking at the time, actually. If you wanted to give your closing thoughts for the listeners, and then we could transition to the roundtable. Well, we caught Graham at a tough time.
Sorry. Sorry. I just dived up there to catch a fly.
Oh. Well, yeah, if you wanted to round out your thoughts, I mean, clearly this attack is going to be used against, well, to justify attacking Iran. It looks unfortunate, but they've been trying to get at Iran for a long time now. You know, I mean.
Yes, they have. And also... Israel's been goading America, and America's been goading Israel to have a go at Iran. I mean, they're both itching for a fight. But Iran's been preparing for this fight for 40 years. Imagine the weaponry they've got at their disposal. This is not going to be good. It's really not going to be good. I find it quite scary.
I do as well.
Iran, of course. Yeah, you take on Iran, you're taking on Russia.
And China.
Make no mistake about it.
They even share a border with China, so.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you're opening a right Pandora's box here. It's scary. And if you're not scared, you're obviously not really paying attention. Because these are very scary things. Very scary things.
Yeah. All these countries have made deals with each other, so they're not going to let Iran just go in the dark to America.
No, and Iran's not going to go down without a big fight, a major fight. Let's face it. That's what's going to happen. Anyway, yeah, it's the top of the hour. Time's passed really quick. It's top of the hour already. But listen, we're dovetailing this show into the round table, folks. So if you're listening and you want to continue this, maybe phone in, take part. Chip in, bring up your thoughts to the table, that'd be great. But I'm going to wind my show down, and then, as I say, we'll dovetail into the round table back to back with this show. So it should be cool. We'd like to hear from you if you're listening, that'd be great. We look forward to that. Anyway, I'm going to wind down. It's Graham Sutherland, 21st Century Jacobite, saying good night and God bless, and I'll speak to you on the round table, if you like.
Shek hars tu agen tan halon ma vruater kam yoma kendan chire furen atar mi fua an Smile, a tune that.